The earliest Buddhist literature was composed in a culture which was oral. That is to say, a culture where writing, it seems, was probably known, but it was not used as a medium for communicating and recording learning. This is not a peculiarly Buddhist thing, but a feature of Indian culture in general. Indian culture has the attitude, I think, had the attitude at this time, and this attitude perhaps survives to some extent still within Indian culture. It has the attitude that real, serious, important learning should be communicated not through books. Books can be left lying around, anyone can pick them up, and if you pick up a book and read it, well, you may not understand what it's about, you may be confused, you may misunderstand it. So really important matters to do with religion and spiritual development and practice should be communicated directly, orally, from the teacher to the pupil. So Buddhist texts were composed and transmitted in this cultural environment, and it seems that they were not written down for at least 200, 300, 400 years. The fact that they were composed in this particular cultural environment means that certain mnemonic techniques were used. Ancient Indian culture was, if you like, a very practiced, skilled oral culture. It wasn't that learning was just kind of spoken and forgotten about. Very specific techniques and ways of memorizing texts had been developed. A number of these mnemonic techniques are fairly obvious to anyone who reads Buddhist texts, comes across early Buddhist texts. To mention two in particular, there's the use of numbered lists, for example. So there are the Four Noble Truths, there are the Eightfold Path. Clearly such numbered lists help you remember something. Thus, if you can only remember seven aspects of the Eightfold Path, you've forgotten something. So these numbered lists are a great feature of early Buddhist texts. Another feature that is clearly connected with the oral composition and transmission is repetition. So a lot of repetition is used so that certain important passages are repeated again and again, sometimes with slight variation. But clearly this repetition helps memory. It's interesting to note that the early editors of Buddhist texts, the early European editors of Buddhist texts and early European translators of Buddhist texts at the end of the 19th century and at the beginning of the 20th century, were rather frustrated by the repetitious nature of Buddhist texts. If you look at the early editions and the early translations, they're full of ellipses of various forms and references back to passages that have already been translated and edited. The trouble with this, of course, is that when you read a Buddhist text and miss out these repetitions, you get rather a disjointed, jumpy kind of text. The flow of the text is interrupted if you just read see earlier, for example, on page 53. So in approaching the translation of these texts, while I have in some cases introduced abbreviations that are not in the original, I have endeavoured to preserve the flow and avoid this kind of device of saying, see what was translated earlier. One, I think, important aspect of the repetition, though, is that it is a mnemonic technique, but I think early Buddhist literature exploits this mnemonic technique in a particular way. It uses it as almost a technique of meditation, a meditative technique. The repetition makes the pace of Buddhist texts rather slow. You have to read these texts not in the frame of mind, I want to get at the information, the essence, quickly. The way to read these texts is almost diametrically opposed to the way we are often taught to read, certainly in the context of a modern university, where students are taught how, you know, reading techniques where they can devour and get through a weighty volume in a few hours, picking out the important things. To read a Buddhist text, you have to get into a frame of mind where you're not in a hurry. You have to be patient. Passages are repeated slowly, and the passages sometimes that are repeated slowly are, I think, deliberately important passages, passages that repeat an important teaching, and the repetition gives you an opportunity to reflect on the teaching, to ponder its meaning. Sometimes the passages that are repeated are poetic passages, passages that throw out vivid images, and the repetition of these images are often quite visual, or the images themselves are often quite visual in nature, and the repetition of them gives you the opportunity to ponder the vivid image that has been evoked, and even visualize it. In this way, Buddhist texts themselves become almost a form of Buddhist meditation. Perhaps it is worth remembering in reading the texts that when they were originally composed, they weren't read so much as listened to. One of the ways of trying to recapture something of the effect of Buddhist texts is perhaps to read them aloud rather than simply read them silently.